You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy, and welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Thanks to the Cincinnati Bengals, the Buffalo Bills made it to the playoffs for the first time since 1999. It was the longest current drought in not only the NFL, but in all of American professional sports. The baton has been passed to the Seattle Mariners, whose last postseason appearance was in Ichiro's rookie season in 2001, as the team won a modern-day record 116 games. Hard at work to pass the baton to somebody else, anybody else, is the general manager of the Seattle Mariners, Jerry DePoto, who joins us now on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Thank you so much for being with me. When you heard that the Bills were in, did you make any Seattle-Buffalo connection?
I didn't make any Seattle-Buffalo connection, but I did see, I have a trio of 20-somethings at home, my kids all 21 to 25, and I walked in on Monday, I think after the Bills secured a playoff spot, and apparently the rapper Lil B decided that he was going to bestow his blessing on the Mariners. And that was the secret sauce for the Bills. So hopefully that's going to be the secret sauce for the Mariners.
Hopefully it is. And you're hard at work to pass the baton to somebody else.
That I would love to do it, and I would love to do it this year. I mean, we like our club. So this is and what I think is a really competitive American League, particularly a very competitive American League West. We feel like we have as good a chance as anybody of hanging in there.
But let's be fair, Jerry. Making the playoffs is harder in baseball than in any other sport. Only 10 teams get in, and it was 8 teams before the second wild card was added. More than half of the NBA and NHL teams get in, and 12 teams make it in the NFL. In fairness, it's really hard to get to October.
It really is, and especially right now in a league that has so many particularly strong teams and a variety of teams who are in rebuilding mode. So, in baseball right now, you have two juxtapositions that are the Dodgers, the Astros, the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Indians on one end of the side of the ledger, the Nationals, and then on the other side of the ledger, so many teams that are rebuilding. And teams like us, like the Mariners, who find themselves, let's call it, in the middle third, we're all fighting for what are likely two available playoff positions. And we'll go in. We've come up short in two of the last 4 years. We went down to the last weekend with a chance to go to the postseason. And it's been painful for our fans for us to fall short. But we really like our team. We feel like it's a very well-balanced club this year.
In your first season in Seattle in 2016, as you just mentioned, you missed the wild card. It was only by 3 games. Last season, you were in it till mid-September, and then the team slumped and lost 8 out of 9. But you were in it.
And the key for us, or the goal for us every year, is to put ourselves in position to play meaningful games in September. And if we're playing meaningful games in September and take our chances, unfortunately, again, for the last 2 years, we've come up short. But it's last year, I think we could point to injury as an excuse of sorts for the position we were in. But the rest of the league was down, and we had an opportunity. And frankly, we just didn't pony up. We didn't do it. The year before, we played our hearts out. And we went down to that final weekend of the season and ultimately coughed it up on Friday night in an extra inning game against Oakland. And the team went flat for the remainder of the weekend. So I feel like at this point going into 2018, we've got players who've been through the journey. We've got 7 different players on our roster who have made all-star teams. We've got a variety of different guys who've done incredible individual things at the major league level. Now we've got to come together as a team and do the things that we think we can do.
Jerry DePoto, the general manager of the Seattle Mariners, with me on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. As you know, Jerry, you played in the East, and it is so parochial here, and the belief that, well, the American League East is the toughest division in baseball. Well, you just made mention of the division you play in. The division you play in has the current world champions and a vastly improved Angels club. Do not have to sit behind the American League East any longer playing in the American League West.
No, you really don't. And you can add into that, you know, one of the winningest teams in baseball for the last decade has been the Texas Rangers. And don't sleep on the Oakland A's, who just when you think they're in rebuild mode, they'll churn out two or three years of 90-plus win seasons. But, you know, the Astros are a juggernaut. They're loaded. I think they're entertaining to watch. Last year's Astros team wasn't just they weren't just the world champs. They were one of the best-built teams maybe in the history of baseball. The balance and quality of the team from offense to pitching to defense, and there's athletes all over the field. And obviously for the Angels, this has been a terrific offseason for them with additions like Shohei Ohtani and Ian Kinsler and Zach Cozart. So we've got our work cut out for us, but you know, we do have a variety of our own star type players, and we went out and made a couple of what we think are key additions in Dia Gordon and Ryan Healy, and bringing on Juan Nicasio for our bullpen. And if our pitching stays healthy, we feel like we have as good a chance as anybody of coming away with one of those spots on the dance card.
You acquired Ryan Healy from Oakland. You brought back pitcher Hisashi Iwakuma on a minor league deal. You've gotten D. Gordon. We'll talk about that in just a moment. You never sit still. You are one of the most active general managers in the game, first at the Angels and now at Seattle.
You're always looking to make your team better. And one of the things I learned coming through front offices, particularly the years I spent in smaller markets, I had the great pleasure of working in Boston in a big market and understanding how to operate wisely or smart baseball under the guidance of Theo Epstein. And you know, I had a number of years, about 10 years, working in front offices in Arizona and in Colorado, where you had to find creative ways of doing things because you were working on a different budget and a different scale. And I learned a lot of lessons. And the one thing I learned is that the window is open for you if you're willing to take chances. And, you know, sometimes you take those chances and you whiff. And God knows I've whiffed on a few. And, you know, sometimes you take those chances and it works. And now we've managed to, over the last 2.5 years, put together what I think is one of the more stable offensive clubs in the league. We've changed the way we play. We have a variety of different speed and athletic type players who can change the game, not only on defense, but on the bases. And I think that stands to be a separator for us this year. And for us, a lot of it comes down to pitcher health. And if we don't have the pitcher today, we're going to find a way to get the pitcher tomorrow, because we owe that to our players, to our fans. And frankly, that's what they hired me to do, was to help the team get better every day.
Jerry DePoto is with us. He's made more than 60 deals since taking over the Seattle Mariners roster in the fall of 2015. The means of communication between one front office and another, Jerry, has changed so drastically. You guys are on your mobile phones constantly, and then there's the great story I just referenced, mentioning you bringing in D. Gordon to make a transition to the outfield from the Miami Marlins. You're on a plane using Wi-Fi, trading texts with the Marlins general manager, Michael Hill, to get D. Gordon. You apparently acquired D. Gordon at 38,000 feet. And the deal was done while you were in the air. And that is really symbolic of the way the game is being played today and the way in which transactions are made. And congratulations to you on that flight.
Unfortunately, that flight was also the return flight coming back from meeting with Shohei Ohtani, who obviously wound up elsewhere. But I did. I went back and forth with Mike via text just to finish up the deal. We had multiple live conversations about D.
Right.
But, you know, once
you had started long before that plane ride in advance of the general manager's meetings.
Correct. And we had those conversations. But, the, you know, the last 20 yards on our way into the end zone took place while I was on a plane. And Mike laughed when we landed and the deal was already consummated, barring anything crazy with physicals. But when the deal was consummated, Mike said in a laugh, you know, Mike and I worked together in Colorado back in the early 2000s. And he said, JD, is that the first time you've ever made a trade on a text without talking through the finish? And I said, nope. as you might expect, when you make as many deals as we have made over the last 3 years, you know, they come in all different shapes and sizes. And I hope this one works out for everybody. They got a couple of really nice young players, and Nick Neidert and Chris Torres and Steven Duggar, and we got what we think is an impact, top of the order, speed, electric energy type player who should make us a very fun team to watch.
But this is not the first trade you've made by text.
Correct. We have actually, through the course of my time here, made a couple of trades by text. I think I've made a trade via text with the Dodgers, and maybe what is my one of the more entertaining trades we've made since I've been here. Back in the summer of 2016, we had again experienced a really short burst riddling of injuries where we had three starting pitchers go down in about a week. And we just didn't have anything internally that was going to help us cover the needs. And I reached out on a couple of veteran AAA pitchers who were bouncing around the International League at the time, and wound up texting back and forth with Ross Atkins with the Toronto Blue Jays. And, you know, we acquired Wade LeBlanc from the Blue Jays that day, all via text. We never actually spoke about it. And we acquired him for future considerations, one of which included if our pitchers came back and, you know, Wade was good to go, we would clear Wade through waivers and return him to the Blue Jays. So it was almost like we were borrowing him. And Wade wound up pitching 50 very effective innings for us through the middle of that summer and keeping us in the postseason hunt. As a matter of fact, I think most of the time Wade was pitching for the Mariners, we were actually holding one of the wild card spots, which was really something for a guy who had spent his time to date in that season in Syracuse, and we were able to procure via text message.
Do you ever send emojis?
Oh yeah, I am an emojis guy. I have now gotten into the GIFs for those general managers who maybe I'm a little closer with, and we can have some fun.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually a couple that I have dealt with. I don't know if you're familiar with the bit emoji. So the emoji that actually looks like you. I have now started firing off an occasional bit emoji with a, you know, try to keep it light.
I just wanted to talk for a moment about your playing career. You were Cleveland's number three draft choice back in 1989. They send you to Watertown, New York, in the New York Penn League for your first pro start, and it's you've got 80 pitches to throw, and it's a great story.
I had 80 pitches to throw, and it lasted me roughly two innings. I felt like when I left the bullpen, I was going to throw a no hitter, and I believe that game I emptied the barrels. I threw the 80 pitches in two innings or thereabouts. I believe I recorded six strikeouts in the two innings, and I walked six. It was pretty fascinating. I did throw a no hitter, but it was unfortunately only for two innings, and I was littered with traffic. I did calm myself down, and I think I had a pretty good summer that year in Watertown, and I'll always remember it fondly. But that first day, we were up in Geneva, New York, to play the Geneva Cubs, and I pitched the first game of a doubleheader. And when they told me I had 80 pitches, and we were at that time in short season ball, you play a seven inning
right
doubleheader game, and I thought seven innings, 80 pitches, I can die. Oh, no hitter easy here, I got it. And it wasn't quite as easy as I thought, and it turned into about a dozen years of a career that wasn't as easy as I thought.
No, but it was good enough. And you get to the major leagues, and of course you're there to pitch, not to hit. But you did go 1-for-22 in your career. You got the hit with Colorado. Who can we embarrass with that story?
We can embarrass a friend of mine and later teammate, Denny Nagel, of the Atlanta Braves, who at the time was in the midst of, I believe, completing a shutout at Coors Field, and which was not an uncommon thing for us in those years. We ran through quite a few pitchers, and we had roughly zero players left to go hit. And We were down in the game. I was asked to go pitch a lengthy outing for me at the time. I was more of a 1-2 inning type guy, and that day I stretched it out, and I got a rare at bat. I think in 8 years in the big leagues, I got about 25 at bats or 20 at bats. And this was, I would say, 4 years into my career, 5 years into my career, and came up off Denny Nagel. And usually the guys that I got to hit off were throwing considerably harder than he did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I can say that about Denny now because we're both old and he throws slow, and so do I. But Denny threw the first pitch, and, you know, after seeing guys like Todd Worrell and, you know, just throwing 95 and grunting, you know, Denny feathered the first fastball, and there was about 88, and my first instinct was, I can hit that. And, so the next one, I closed my eyes and swung as hard as I could, and as I recall, it was a rocket back through the middle of the box, and I got to first base, and at the time, a guy I think is not given his just due as a Hall of Famer, Fred McGriff, was playing first base for the Braves, and Fred came up and started meandering in back of me to hold me onto the bag, and I was in the midst of screaming across the infield for Clint Hurdle, our coach at the time, to grab the ball. You know, it was my first hit, and I was like, get the ball, somebody get the ball, and the crime dog inched up in back of me, and he said, is that your first hit? And I said, yeah.
And then after 5 years,
he moved back.
Yeah,
he did not hold me on. He moved back.
And, of course, he didn't hold you on.
It was great.
You got the ball?
It's actually one of the memories of my,
Clint got the ball for you?
I gave it to my dad.
Yeah. Oh, how nice. That's wonderful. And I'm not going to make jokes about hitting because 1 year, my first year in Little League, they played me in right field in the Bronx because it was against the rules to play me in Sweden. And so I went on to hit 1 year 108, but I got to tell you, Jerry, it was a hard 108, and I can really appreciate 1 for 22 and the fact that you got the ball and you gave it to your dad. Before we go, Edgar to the Hall of Fame, your hitting coach.
I think it should be a no-brainer, and I'll say that before I ever got a chance to work every day with Edgar. We were teammates in the winter of 1994 during the player strike, you know, back when we were all trying to stay active in the event that we would come back to play. And, you know, ultimately we didn't, but I had a chance to play with Edgar that winter. And he was at that point still developing into what he ultimately became, but he had a batting championship in his back pocket. One of the true great hitters of our generation. Nobody had a shorter, more direct swing and could use the gaps better than Edgar Martinez. And in an era where we really strive to find hitters who can effectively command the strike zone, I can't think of five of all time who are better than Edgar Martinez. And to boot, a great guy who's as humble as they come and shows up to work every day. And in what I think is a, you know, really fascinating journey, he's now here as our hitting coach, as you know, and is working on, I believe, coming up on his 40th year in the Mariners organization. Mm-hmm. Which is I think 36 years or something thereabouts in the Mariners organization, has never worked for anybody else in any capacity.
You have a long way to go.
Yes, a long way to go. I don't know if I'm going to get there, and I've been too many places to make the same claim.
But I have to let you go because I know you have to get back to work so you can pass the baton to somebody else. So that'll do it for Jerry DePoto and myself on MLB.com. If you were on the move, thanks for the ride. And thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.